Okay, the Civil Justice Committee will come to order, and we do have a quorum, so we can begin business. The first item of business is Representative Westrom moves the March 2nd minutes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Carries. I want to note for the record that I made a mistake on my looking at it last time, and Representative Champion had actually passed instead of abstaining, and wanted to come back, and my understanding from you was that you wanted to vote yes on the bill. And I had looked at the column, and I just saw the abstain, and so I didn't realize that. So that's all we can do on it. Okay, thank you. And then the first item of business is the revisers bill, House File 1171, and Representative Jackson. You have the longest bill we've seen so far.
I want you to know I really slaved over this bill.
You spent all summer and fall working on it.
Culmination of a lot of work.
Representative Jackson,
yes,
moves House File 1171, and it's just to go directly to the
General Register.
Thank
yes,
you,
please.
Representative Jackson. Go ahead, and I see Ms. Timmons there.
All right. And maybe I should start with moving the amendment.
Representative Jackson moves amendment 0074. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, to get it in shape, the author wants all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, carries. Go ahead, Representative Jackson.
All right. I'm sure most everybody realizes that in the off-season, the reviser will go with a fine-tooth comb over bills that were passed in the previous session, find every typographical error, grammatical error, misplaced numerals, non-sequences, etc. And they've done, I think, an outstanding job again. And I have with me Michelle Timmons, our reviser, to answer any specific questions.
Representative Jackson, I just noticed something. Were you warned about animal bills when you came here?
Oh, dogs?
I noticed that there's dogs involved in.
And Chairman
Mulley.
It's pretty
famous that they often blow up.
Oh, well, interestingly, on the dog part of the amendment, it was a citizen lobbyist who caught the typo in the statutory reference and brought it to the attention of the reviser.
Thank you. Ms. Timmons?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members, I'm Michelle Timmons, the reviser of statutes, and this is the annual revisers bill. This is the one that we prepare during the interim and the early part of session, and it includes errors that we find in the editing process. We try to make sure that none of these changes change policy, that they're all non-substantive and non-controversial. We have prepared the bill, and first of all, I should say Danette Rahm is in the audience. She's my deputy reviser who prepared the bill this year. And this year it's just two articles. Article 1 is the one that includes miscellaneous corrections, typographical errors, grammatical errors. There are a lot of changes in range references or references to other statutes. Usually this occurs when a statute is repealed and sometimes renumbered. And then we need to go back and make sure those references are corrected. And then Article 2 contains cross references to Data Practices Act sections that are codified outside of Chapter 13. What we're doing now is, as those sections pass, we're trying to include a cross reference right in Chapter 13 in special sections that will point the reader of the statutes to data practices classifications that are in other chapters of the Minnesota statutes. And sometimes those cross-references are missed when the main data practices section is passed during the session. So that's what Article 2 does. It goes back and cleans up those cross-references. And so with that general outline, if there are any particular questions.
Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Chair Mueller and Ms. Timmons. The issue about classifying data outside of Chapter 13, it seems to be a real growing trend, and I know last session a number of times bills would come to the floor with data practices provisions in them that had never come through this committee at all, and it was, you know, kind of clean up stuff at the last minute and happened on the more than a handful of occasions. Is that a new trend? Is it something, I mean, are we causing more problems by doing this and then having to put all these cross references? Would it be your recommendation that we try and keep these in Chapter 13 than to continue this process and having to do this cross reference?
Ms. Timmons.
Representative Holberg, Mr. Chairman, and members, I don't think it's a new trend. I think that's why this data practices project occurred very early in my tenure as revisor. It would have been first raised in 1999 or 2000, I think. And already at that time, there were many, many data classifications that were not in Chapter 13. And oftentimes it does make sense to have the data classification together with the substantive topic in the statutory chapter that deals with it. But that was creating a lot of problems for people who were trying to research the classification of a particular type of data. And so there was actually a task force that looked at this, and what they came up with was a recommendation to add sections in Chapter 13. So, for example, after the section that deals with, I don't know, law enforcement data, then we added a new section that says law enforcement data codified elsewhere, and added new statutory provisions that are just cross-references to where else the data is classified. And then online, we have hyperlinks, so somebody researching can immediately, you know, link and go to that substantive section. So I think it's not a new problem. It's a continuing problem, and one that we've tried to solve in this manner.
Thank you.
Representative Holberg, did you have any? No further questions? Are there any other questions regarding this very controversial bill? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Carries. Representative Tamer.
Oh.
Yes. Okay. Right. Representative Tamer, do you want to do House File 1156?
Yes. Chair, I'd like to move House File 1156, and I'm not sure about the correct motion. Maybe you can help me with this, but I would like it to pass and be referred to the Finance Committee with a re-referral to the Public Safety Finance Committee.
Representative Paymer, the correct motion is that you would move to pass House File 1156 and refer it to the Finance Committee, and then we have no control over or even make recommendations to what
then
the senior member who came with this capital decides to do with it.
Okay, then that's my motion, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Paymer. Go ahead and present your
And Mr. Chair, I have an amendment to the the bill, the A1 amendment.
Oh, okay. Representative Tamar moves the A1 amendment to get in the shape the author wants. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, carries. Thank you, Representative Tamar. Go ahead.
Chair members, so this is a very simple bill. We believe it's a cost-saving bill to the court. It simply allows the chief judges of our judicial districts to appoint a person who they believe is suitable to act as a referee in conciliation court. So you have the amendment in front of you. I have with me to provide some brief testimony. Currently, I should say that Ramsey and Hennepin County currently use this practice. And the cost-saving idea is to relieve the pressure on the court so district court judges aren't hearing so many conciliation court cases. So with me is Sean Bartsch, who is a referee in Ramsey County Court, as well as Sue DeSalle, who's the court administrator, to provide some brief testimony.
Ms. Bartsch?
Bartsch.
Yes. Okay, you'll find something that's okay. Go ahead.
Thank you. As Representative Tamar indicated, I'm a referee in Ramsey County. I've served as such since 1991. I'm just going to give you a tiny background of Ramsey's experience so that you understand. I actually suggested this bill to Representative Tamar, who's my representative, and a wonderful representative, by the way. Ramsey, I think the system works exceedingly well, and I do think it could be a cost saving for other counties if they choose to do it. Right now, they can't do it by statute. It's only Hennepin and Ramsey that are allowed to do it. How it works in Ramsey is that I and 27 other attorneys who are appointed by the district judges serve as referees. I do this one day a month, so it's not a huge time. We then hear the cases that are allowed jurisdictionally to be heard by conciliation court, which currently has to be $7,500 or less. The typical cases we hear are landlord-tenant issues, security deposits. I hear an awful lot of cases from small businesses trying to collect on debts. Wednesday I had court. I had 33 cases. They were all on behalf of hospitals and doctors trying to collect medical bills that weren't covered by insurance. So conciliation court offers a cost-effective method for the smaller cases to get heard, but there's really no reason that they have to be heard by a district court judge. They're typically simple cases that are, as I said, much of them are debt collection cases. The filing fee is less. In conciliation court, the filing fee is $50. If you're in district court, it's $250. Referees are considered state employees. They are paid $75 per day. Many of us waive that fee, so you get a lot of us for free, and I think you probably could get others for free. The point of this bill is to simply allow other counties to, if they choose to, set up a similar system. It's a pretty big cost saving for the state because I asked our court administrator, Michael Upton, to sort of give me some stats on our experience. We handle roughly 6,000 cases a year. The cost to the state is, for those referees who do get paid, $30,000. But the flip side of that is the filing fees that we bring in bring the state $300,000 in revenue. So $300,000, it costs you $30,000. I'm thinking that's a pretty good bargain for the taxpayers. If you look, our appeal rate is 1.5%, which I think would stand out as a pretty good appeal rate to any court in the state. So that tells me that the people who appear in front of us are satisfied with the product they get and with the results that they get. So if you have any other questions, I would be happy to answer them.
Probably a better appeal rate than any county Representative Jackson.
Well, among cost savings, wouldn't there be yet a bigger cost saving in that anytime we can save our judges for, you know, litigation, aren't we really, isn't that yet another cost saving?
Mr. Chair, Representative Jackson, absolutely. I didn't get into all of it, but yeah, I mean, I think this is a win-win for everybody because you really ought to reserve district judges for the criminal cases and I hate to say more serious because, you know, if someone comes to me, their case is serious to them, which is why they need to be heard by a qualified person, but absolutely, I think reserving the district judges for the other cases is clearly a cost saving.
Mr. Chair, I want to follow up.
Representative Jackson.
After the appeal period is over and these conciliation court judgments aren't appealed, it's relatively easy and inexpensive to have them docketed as district court judgments, correct?
Ms. Bart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Jackson. I don't know, but it would be the same as it was in district court, so it doesn't cost you more to do it that way.
Right.
And you're correct. If we give you a judgment, it gets docketed exactly the same way it would in district court, so it's as if you went to district court. The other thing I should tell you, if someone isn't satisfied with what a referee does, they have the right to appeal to a district judge, and it's considered de novo, which means they start over. It's as if they never went to conciliation court, so there's absolutely no harm in having tried conciliation court first. The other thing I was going to tell you is that simply by filing an action in conciliation court, a lot of cases go away just by the act of filing a case. and paying $50 to file it is a lot better than $250 to file it. So, okay.
Representative Jackson. Okay, next is Representative Wester.
Chair, I have a couple different questions. $75 a day doesn't seem like much. Why do we only pay $75 a day? Is there a line of people just looking to do this? And what's the motive for them to do it for no money or virtually no money? $75 a day.
Ms. Park.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, Ms. Dossal just told me that we used to pay $150 a day, and because of budget cuts, we knocked it to $75. So I think it's, at least I personally view it more as pro bono and service, so that's why I waived the fee. Any attorney isn't doing it for money at $75 a day. So it's not a money-making proposition to take half a day away from your practice to go do this. So I think you wouldn't have a problem finding either retired attorneys or attorneys to do it for the $75 or even pro bono. Frankly, it's fun to do. It's, you know, when I do my cases, they can take 2 and 3 years, and here I go in and it's, you know, justice at its most basic. And that's fun to be part of that, you know. It's very, you know, someone comes to you with a problem, you get to solve it and give them a judgment. That's a good feeling. So
you like the TV judges?
Chairman Mueller, people ask me that, and I say, no, I don't yell like Judge Prudy does. But, yes, that's the question I get asked.
Representative West.
So, Mr. Chair, one day a month, is that just your choice or the court's choice? I mean, do some do it more than that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, you do it 1 or 2 days. Ramsey has 28 referees, and we have court 3 times a week, and that's just the number that we need that people do, you know. I think the one of the advantages is that each district can set it up how it works for them. Hennepin does it differently than we do. I don't do it in Hennepin, but I know they do it differently than we do. Our system, I think, works really well, and that's all I can tell you is our experience. That, you know.
Okay. One last question. It might be for Representative Paymar as much or more than you, but you said the cap is $7,500 right now. That's been that way for some years now. I don't remember the last time it was changed. Have you, Representative Paymar, have you ever thought of raising that cap anytime soon in the near future? And I'm asking you because I'm supportive of maybe raising it. I'd like to get your response to the witness.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, it's interesting that you bring that up because we were just discussing that in my office before coming down, that it has not changed since 1994. So it probably is time to make that adjustment, which is another reason I wanted it to go to Finance Committee, because we were going to have Mr. Carter do a fiscal note on this and then also look at what that would mean in terms of saving the court's time if we did increase it to $12,000 or something. But that would be I didn't want to do an amendment here because it was not the intent of the bill at this point, but I think it's something we should explore.
And that would be quite a jump. Representative Boland.
Well, Mr. Chair, I can just add, and I have no other questions, but I would support that. I think 12 sounds like a good number. I mean, in this day and age, there's a lot of disputes that could be resolved, and they're just simply a debtor-creditor scenario, as the witness has pointed out. So, for what it's worth, I would support us looking at that. I'm glad to hear you are.
Thank you.
Representative Boland.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First off, on Representative Westrom's comment, I do have a piece of bill out there to raise that right now. There is a separate bill out. I didn't necessarily pick 12. I think it's at 15, but there is.
Better yet.
But there is a bill out there to do that. But that wasn't why I was wanting to ask a question. That was just a comment because there is one out there. And I, by the way, do support this. So I'm just. But the question I've got is, when you're saying de novo, are we going straight to the present appeals process, or are we going to go through a conciliation court proceedings with the judge?
Mr. Chair, Representative Boland, I apologize, I didn't explain that well.
Yeah.
If someone goes to conciliation court, gets a judgment, and disagrees with the judgment of the referee,
right,
they appeal to the district court. So they first go to the district court judge, and then it would proceed just as if they filed it in district court. And, you know, if they weren't happy with that, then they could appeal to the appeals court.
Okay, so basically there could be a... Excuse me, yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There could conceivably be a third tier there in the rare cases that do get appealed, because we're going to go through the regular conciliation court proceedings if somebody does appeal, right? Is that how Ramsey's presently doing it?
Representative Olin, Mr. Chair, I'm not understanding your question. As it is now, the case gets heard in conciliation court. I hear it. Mm-hmm. I render a judgment.
Right.
They have, I think it's 20 days within which to appeal that.
Mm-hmm.
If one of the other parties decides to appeal it, it simply goes to the district court and starts over just as if they had started there in the first place. And by de novo, I just mean that none of what happened in my court gets transferred to the district court. There's no, and I forgot to mention this, in conciliation court, there's no court reporters, there's no transcriptions. It's basically me in a room full of people with problems. So
Mr. Chair, just for clarification, what I'm trying to do is clarify, because I'm just trying to get a feel for it, because in conciliation court today, and like, I'll just use Pennington County as an example, would go to conciliation court, the judge would make a ruling, and if you appeal, then you would have the right to a jury trial and everything else on your appeal. Are we going immediately to that step, or are we staying at the step where the judge, if you don't like what the referee did, the judge will hear it as if it was still in the regular conciliation court? That's the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Owen. The second scenario, it would go right to district court and a jury trial if they, you know, it literally is if they walked up to the counter and said, I want to file a district court action.
Representative Olin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And that's what I wanted to hear, because I didn't want to hear a situation that we were going to still end up with a tier in the middle.
No.
Okay.
Ms. Barton.
Thank you.
Representative Mahoney.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I know this is kind of a money issue, but and I don't like to bring them up in policy committees, but if I wouldn't be too rude, your average hourly rate as an attorney is not $75. Could I ask what that is when it comes to the comment that I want to make about the courts? And if you're uncomfortable with that, that's fine.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney. In my practice, I typically don't charge hourly, but when I do for work, it's $250 an hour.
Thank
so,
you.
Yes, more than 75.
Mr. Chair, Ms. DeSalle, Representative Tamar, I think you know where I'm going. It's a bit unseemly for us to beg to have justice from our courts, or our courts to come to us to beg so that they can afford decent justice. And it's truly a shame. I don't know where we go with this, but we do need to find out some way rather than begging attorneys to give us free legal advice and legal services. It's just not appropriate, and we've got to figure out some solution to this. And I hope Representative Paymer, as the finance chair of this committee, can come up with something.
I don't think there's
no response
needed
for that.
Mr. Chair, I was wondering if Mr. Stahl, if Mr. Stahl can make a quick comment on the bill, if he's our board administrator.
Ms. DeSalle.
The chair and members, my name is Sue DeSalle. I'm the state court administrator, and I'm here on behalf of the judiciary to support this bill. We were in this committee recently testifying about our Access and Service Delivery Initiative, which is attempting to expand the use of technology and the use of lower-paid subordinate officers as a way to deliver judicial services in a different way and a less expensive way, and this bill certainly does that. As you know, Hennepin and Ramsey already uses per diem lawyers as referees in these matters. Our Access and Service Delivery Initiative indicates that and recommends that we should be doing this in other kinds of proceedings, lower level proceedings, and in other places. We did talk about the lower pay. We also talked about the potential for pro bono assistance from lawyers, and that's what we've heard here. So we certainly support this. This gives us one more tool for trying to deal with the difficult budgetary circumstances we find ourselves in.
Ms. DeSalle, I have a question. I don't think either one of them tend to specialize either, at least tenapanessin, I don't think. Has that ever been considered, just like you have specialized referees for probate, mental health, family law, various ones? Has there ever been any thought of doing that with this type of a referee for conciliation court?
Mr. Chair and members, thank you for the question. I think that that's exactly what that access and service delivery talks about. Is there a way to centralize, regionalize some of these hearings using ITV and specialized officers? Probate is another area. Commitments is another area. Are there things that we can be doing to reduce the cost but also have more specialization? So that certainly is on our radar. We're looking at that, examining that very thing.
Okay, thank you. Representative Champion.
One question. It might be off the beaten path just a little. It's my understanding that once a person goes to conciliation court, and as you so eloquently stated, once a judgment is rendered, if one party, well, if one of the parties are dissatisfied or is dissatisfied, they would then be the removing party and they could appeal, and then that would go to the district court. Now, you indicated that the district court judge would look at that case de novo as if nothing occurred, but isn't it true, and would you support a change to Minnesota Statute 491.02A that suggests that if a person receives a judgment on the conciliation court level, let's say for $6,500, so that's person A, but person B, who of course didn't like the $6,500 judgment, appeals and goes to the district court, that the district court judge then renders a judgment in favor of person A again, but this time for $3,500. Under the statute that I just articulated, the person who still prevailed and got $3,500 would have to pay the cost of the removing party, because the judgment on the district court level was the difference was less than $500. And so would you support a change in that law, because that deals under the conciliation court statute, just to make sure that there's fairness throughout the process?
Ms. Barch.
Mr. Chair, Representative Champion, you know, I can't speak to that right now. I haven't studied the issue, so I don't, it's not something I came prepared to speak on, so my apologies.
Representative Olin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This will only take about 2 seconds. I would like to commend the referees actually for being willing to do these cases at $75 per day, because I have sat in conciliation court waiting for a county attorney matter, and quite frankly, I wouldn't sit in some conciliation court cases at $75 an hour.
Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, this is one aspect of this that gives me concern, and that is the appointment process. Representative Paymar, is this a camel's nose under the tent of going to appointed judges like some have been promoting around here? And or have you given any consideration to letting this be an elected position?
Mr. Chair, the answer is no and no.
Representative Kelly, to you.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. It seems like very cost-effective, efficient. Is there any reason why any of the chief judges would not be using this? Would they be hesitant to, any of them be hesitant to use this?
Is this Ms. LaSalle or...
Mr. Chair and Representative Kelly, I don't know that there would be a hesitance. We certainly, as I said, this is part of our ASD report. It would have to be looked at in each district, as was indicated, that it would have to be tailored for the circumstances of that district, the size of that district, where they would have these, that kind of thing. So I don't know that there would be any hesitance to take advantage of this tool, but it would be a district-by-district decision.
Mr. Chair, I guess with those numbers, I would just say I'm sure we should definitely encourage the tool to be used then if we haven't. Thank you.
Representative Weston.
Chair, the witness, either witness, you say you spend a half a day or a day out of your practice, but how much extra time do you spend reading the law or doing research to make your decision as you know, if it's a contract dispute or something that you have to do some research on? How much extra time do you spend on that, and do you get use or access to the law clerks that the judges have for making doing any of that?
Ms. Barch,
extra research.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, no, we get access to no law clerks. We are our own law clerks. And I've done this since 1991. Initially, I probably did spend a lot more time outside of the cases because they were areas that I didn't practice in. But with anything over time, you learn landlord-tenant law, or you learn whatever it is, and you have to spend less time. If a case needs me to go outside research, I absolutely do it. There's a law library right at the courthouse, and I go up there and use the law library. But I wouldn't say it's frequent at that point. You know, initially there's a learning curve, so initially, yes, there is a fair amount of time outside of the actual hearing time to, if you have to research an area, to make sure that you understand the law behind the case.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Barch, is there any inhibition among people after a judgment is put forth in the conciliation court? Is there any inhibition to them appealing? What type of frequency is there in that appeal process?
Ms. Barch.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, are you asking what our appeal rate is?
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I mean, how often do people appeal to the district court in that process? Is it frequent? Is it is it cost? Do they have to pay another fee in order to get into that? I'm thinking if I lose a judgment in conciliation court and I don't like the outcome, let's try it again at the district court level. How often does that happen?
Mr. Chair, Representative Viscoski, in Ramsey County, our experience is 1.5% of the cases. In other words, out of the 6,000 that are filed every year, about 75 appeal to the next, up to the district court. I'm not part of that process. It's my understanding, I think it's $200 to remove it, which just puts you on par with if you'd gone to district court right away, because to file in district court is $250, so they just charge you the extra to get you in district court. I think we have, again, the 1.5% is, we're pretty proud of that appeal rate. That says that the vast majority of people are satisfied with the judgment that they got. So.
Okay, it looks like everybody, Representative Paymar.
Well, I just wanted to say, I really want to thank Ms. Barks for coming down and doing this and for her efforts on this bill. And contrary to my good friend, Representative Mahoney, there's a lot of people like my constituent who volunteers tremendously in my district on all kinds of things who are willing to do this pro bono if they had to, and there's a lot of people out there that we should utilize, and I strongly encourage this bill.
Representative Seymour renews his motion to pass as amended and send the bill to finance. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, no. Carried. Representative Swale. Representative Swales, we are going to take a little bit of testimony from you, but because we did have the hearing an hour and 10 minutes already and took testimony, but I had promised Ms. Frenette from the Builders Association, because she couldn't go to that, to have time this morning. She says 5 minutes will be, so why don't we give each side about 7-8 minutes? That'll equal it off. So you can start, and then we'll hear from Ms. Frenette after.
Mr. Chair, would you move the bill for me, please?
Oh, yes, the chair will move House File 211 to pass and It goes through the general register.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the main thing I would like to do first is to thank the committee for coming to Woodbury and for your very, very respectful attention to the homeowners who have gone through some very catastrophic experiences. I have with me here this morning Nancy Cameron, who is just going to speak very briefly about some of the things that she has experienced with her situation.
Okay. Ms. Cameron?
Thank you. Thank you. I'm Nancy Cameron. I'm a homeowner from Shoreview, Minnesota, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify here today in support of House File 211. If a new home warranty law is to provide meaningful protection, it must allow homeowners to recover their attorney's fees. Without a provision for attorney fees, the homeowner's legal costs largely eat up any recovery the homeowner may win. I know this from personal experience. 6 years ago, after we discovered major construction defects in our home built by a prominent member of the Builders Association of Minnesota, BAM, which is also going to be testifying here today, we asked that the four involved contractors work with us to resolve our claim. They refused. The defendants and their attorneys blamed each other, but not us. They refused to mediate in good faith. They brought unfounded summary judgment motions, and they dragged out the litigation. We were forced to take out a $110,000 loan on our modestly priced $250,000 house to repair the damage, and we were forced to sue the defendants. Their legal strategy was intended to cause our legal costs to soar and to force us to settle at a fraction of our actual costs. The strategy worked. After repairs of $150,000, we received a settlement of $130,000. This is $20,000 less than the actual cost to repair our house. In addition, by the time we settled, we had legal costs of about $60,000. This included attorney's fees and expert costs. After repairing the house, we had a net loss of $80,000. House File 811 is needed to avoid this atrocious result, to ensure that the new home warranty means something, and to discourage prolonged litigation. Currently, the playing field is not level. Builders have insurers to provide them with attorneys and to defend these warranty claims. Homeowners insurance does not cover these warranty claims. It doesn't cover the repair costs or any necessary legal costs. Builders and their insurers have no incentive to reach fair, equitable settlements. Rather, they can count on high litigation costs to force homeowners to settle for a fraction of their repair costs or to forego pursuing their legal remedies altogether. If prevailing homeowners in a home warranty dispute were able to recover their legal costs, the builders and the insurance companies would work toward prompt and fair resolutions and settlements. I urge you to support the passage of House File 211 and not let the Builders Association of Minnesota scuttle this legislation for the sixth year in a row. Thank you.
Ms. Wales, do you have a few minutes if you want it? Or
well, I have one other testifier, sir, who goes all the way from Wilmer, if that would be all right.
Yeah. Please state your name.
Oh, I'm sorry, John Werda from Wilmer, Minnesota.
Werda?
Werda, W-E-A-R-D-A.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Werda.
Our similar is not, or our situation is not any different from the lady here that just spoke. I'm not going to get into too many specifics other than our home was valued at a tax value of $289,100 after our addition. It's presently valued at $48,400. And we've been walking this road of litigation. And I just feel it's a bit disingenuous to the other side. The opposing attorneys are asking us for our legal opinion. We are not the experts, but they have not once called any of our experts to back up their documentation to clarify it. And so it's really, I think, without this bill, the way it is right now, it's actually a disincentive for the insurance companies to come in good faith and recognize there's been some gross wrongdoing across the state over the years. I'm sure they're very happy with the way things are in place right now, very comfortable with that. But it's, I think that comment about having a level playing field is appropriate. If we could put this in place and offer incentive for the insurance companies to come in and recognize there's some issues out there, there's problems going on, and not beat up the homeowner, but step up to the plate in good faith to try and give relief to what's happened, and also to take the burden of an already clogged court system, give some relief to that as well by getting to some settlements ahead of time instead of going through the motions and straining out the homeowner.
Thank you. And my understanding, Mr. Andreessen's here just for questions.
Yes.
Okay. Is there any more representatives, Wales? Or?
If it's all right, Mr. Chair, I'll wait until after Ben testifies and then I have some final comments.
Ms. Finette, you want to call?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Lisa Fernette. I'm with the Builders Association of Minnesota. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you guys, especially since I was not able to make it to the committee hearing that you had a few weeks ago on a Monday evening, though they represent the Wells District. We appreciate it. I'm here to to testify in opposition to House File 211, the recovery of attorney's fees for breaches of warranty. The majority of cases litigated in the American court system currently abide by the American rule. The American rule provides that each party to a civil lawsuit pays for his own share of the contested litigation. The litigation is proper recourse to resolve a dispute between parties who have an honest disagreement on a claim. Neither party should be penalized for exercising or defending their rights, regardless of this outcome. In short, the American rule assists in maintaining balance between claims that have substance and claims that don't. The Builders Association of Minnesota fully understands that on the part of the homeowner that they'd like to have resolution for a warranty claim from the builder. However, other parties, like insurers and subcontractors, do affect, sometimes more than builders, the scope and length and settlement of cases, yet all costs now fall to the builder. We heard about an example that Ms. Cameron had earlier in wanting to level the playing field and litigation being dragged out and having four parties not coming together to resolve her dispute. Again, builders don't always have the opportunity to work on things that they'd like to. We have subcontractors and insurers who make it more difficult for us to pursue fixing a house up or making things end more quickly. With regards, real quickly, I wanted to point out, they talked about the fact that builders have insurers and insurers have attorneys that are supposed to properly help settle their claims and get things fixed. A lot of times builders have to hire attorneys to indemnify themselves against the insurance company because the insurance company is dragging something out so long. You hear a lot of instances where people say that we've had to hire attorneys. That's the reason we've had to hire attorneys, because we can't get the insurance company to indemnify our claims. One other real quick point I'd like to make is one of the reasons that these cases take a bit of time to settle is because of an effort is being made to include all the potential parties at fault. It saves judicial time and resources. Awarding attorney's fees only to the vendor under a warranty statute that applies only to vendors will have a chilling effect on settlements and delay settlements further, because at-fault parties other than the vendor builder will take the position that such fees are the obligation of vendor only, and subcontractors and their insurers will not pay for any portion of those fees. Let me say, by wrapping this up real quickly, that we can only survive on getting new customers. And if somebody is not happy with something, a business can't continue to survive. So builders would like to come out and fix these problems and take care of them. We have a lot of roadblocks and obstacles that don't help us either. Thank you.
That was quick. Thank you.
I promise that. Quick.
I just have a quick comment. The area of mechanics liens is something I've been hugely involved in. And in that case, the contractor can get attorney's fees against the homeowner, and in that area, I know that having that attorney's fees does speed up the process, because I've represented, including insurance companies, a lot on that. And in that case, the insurance company is pushed to move up, because they end up paying the attorney's fees for the homeowner to the contractor. So my experience is exactly the opposite, but we are open up to questions now. And Representative Mahoney, I believe you're first.
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you. I really don't have a question. I think I stated it at the Woodbury hearing. You know, I've been on civil law or commerce my whole term, all my terms at this Capitol building, and I've heard this bill almost every year. And frankly, gone through the homeowner's side, the builder's side. I just don't understand. This is not the builder's problem. It's not the homeowner's problem. It is the insurance company's problem. They drag this out. They do not want to drop a dime at all. And until we get the insurance companies on the hook for this, whether it's they have to come in and they're required by law to fix the problem and then bring in the court to figure out who pays, I don't really care. But until we do something along those lines, we're going to have a bill like this come back to us every year, fortunately, of some form or another. And it's sad because people can't live in their houses and they go into court and spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to get toasted. I could go on and on. I'm going to vote for this bill, but it's not going to solve the problem until the insurance companies are forced to come to the table and do what they said they were going to do in the first place.
Thank you, Representative Jackson.
Thank you,
Representative Mahoney. Next is Representative Jackson.
Well, and as a follow-up, I suggest it would be in the Builders Association's interest to have something similar in that if they have to litigate against their insurer for proper coverage wrongfully denied, that they get attorney's fees, because that would offer them resolution. And it's my experience, just as a chairman, Mullery's, that when attorney's fees are on the line, you settle a whole lot faster.
Sir, Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Twelves, has this been to Commerce yet?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Zukowski, no. I believe the next step for this bill is to go to the General Register.
Yes, Representative Swales, we haven't received a request from Commerce. So, if there's no other... Oh, Representative Zukowski, another question.
Mr. Chair, maybe you help me with protocol, but shouldn't this bill go to the Commerce Committee?
Representative Zukowski, I don't think so. Attorney's fees are normally considered more in the area of like rules of court or something like that, which is this committee. It doesn't change anything on the cause of action. If it was a commerce cause of action, changing the cause of action, I think it would. As an attorney's fees, I can see where it. I think it doesn't have to go, but that's up to the Commerce Chair, and he has not requested it. So we don't request bills for somebody else. Is there any other comments? Okay, all in favor of Chair Renouse's motion to pass and send it to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Carries. Thank you, members. We're adjourned. Thank you, Representative Smith.